Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 263. There's something in the air tonight, and apparently it's a pesticide. We'll get to that in just a minute, though. We have a great show for you today. I am pretty well caffeinated, as you may or may not be able to tell. This is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast, so it makes it a little bit easier to feel the vibe here tonight. This and all the other shows are lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. Coincidentally enough, caffeination.com. Hopefully you're having a great week. It has been nothing but busy around here, both in the Caffeination Lair and at work at the lovely Temple University. It has been a serious confluence of activity. The students come back next Tuesday. PodCamp kicks off next Friday, and it is like... unbelievable the amount of things that are currently on my plate and have to do. And when I was talking about a little bit of something in the air tonight, I was really seriously talking about pesticides, because we got a little missive from across the street today. We got home, getting the boy out of the car and everything, and our neighbors say, "Hey, Paul, got something to tell you about. You know they're spraying for West Nile virus." I was like, "Okay." Didn't really bother me. She said, "They're doing it tonight. The cops came by recently and said, you know, you might want to pull your children in, close your windows, close your doors, turn on your air conditioning, whole nine yards." And the pain about it is, a couple weeks ago, when we were having a really nasty heat wave, they could have done it back then, and I wouldn't have cared. Right now, it's gorgeous outside. It's like a 60 degree night, you know, 55, 60 degrees, and it really pains me to have to put the air conditioning on. It is just so lovely outside. It's great sleeping weather, so I might actually kick it off around midnight tonight and just go around and open back up the house. They were saying all the spraying's supposed to be done from 8 to 12, so yeah, so this is currently being recorded while I can't leave the house. I don't had a lot of missives from Twitter and a couple other places that are saying, "Oh yeah, you know, it's really a good thing." Oh, I understand it's a good thing. It's just one of those things where it kind of caught me unawares. There wasn't very much community information passed along. It was kind of word of mouth through the neighborhood, which luckily enough, we live close enough to our neighbors where it's actually nice and easy to get all that kind of information. But before we get too far off topic here, just one of those things that's weighing on my mind, kind of playing around with my brain a little bit, kind of pushed off everything that we were supposed to be doing here today. We have a great show lined up for you. We have a whole ton of TechCraft, a bunch of caffeine and food, as per usual. And, you know, it's kind of cool. I'm really happy with the information and stuff that we're going to be playing around with here tonight. We had so much information that I actually kicked a couple of the small minor stories over to our Tumblr blog. So head on over to caffeination.tumblr.com. That's T-U-M-B-L-R. And you can see all the other fun little quick one-off stories. We had a couple different things about different syncs and stuff like that, which usually may have made the podcast just because I think they're interesting. But this tonight, we don't have time to waste. Why? Because I'm wasting it right now. All right, first up, just a little bit of a reminder. If you're going to be in the Philadelphia area September 6th and 7th, actually 5th, 6th, and 7th, please register for PodCamp Philadelphia. I'm not going to do the whole radio spiel. Apparently, we now have a big radio commercial heading out on one of the local news stations. So, but... It's a great unconference. I'm going to be broadcasting as much stuff live as possible. I'm also going to be hooking up with the so-called Philly Tech guys. It's a term that was kind of coined at last year's PodCamp with Mike Smith from over at the Mike Tech Show, Keith Albright from the Mind of Root, and I think there's one or two other people who are going to be there. I have to actually head on over and check it out. But we're all scheduled to do a live taping, so that's going to be fun. I'm going to let you know all the information and details on that. Mike's kind of running the show on that one, so I need to actually make sure I'm in, have my face in the place. You know, I know I'm going to be all running around. It's really exciting to have this kind of thing come into the place where I work. I was talking about it on one of the pages that I recently put up on caffeination.com. It is really kind of crazy to think that two of the things that take up pretty much most of my time during my life, other than my family, are work and podcasting. And to have them kind of meet together in the same place is really, really cool. So I'm excited to beat the band here. I can't wait to share all the different stuff that we learned about, and just I hope to see you there. All right, moving right along, because we have a ton, like I said, of stuff to talk about here today. What would you pay for a tiny space PC? I'm not talking about a PC that takes up a small amount of space, so even though this is actually what it is, it's called the PC Pro. This thing is actually available in the... It's been available in Japan for quite a while. It's just making its way into the United Kingdom, and eventually it'll filter down to the United States. I guess there's some kind of hierarchy of tech gadgets and where they can go. It has everything that you would want. It has a gigabyte of compact flash for storage on there. It has USB, built-in Ethernet, and it's all in a tiny cube. Literally, this thing is half the size of a Sony PSP. It looks like it's maybe like 3 inches cubed. I don't know exactly what else. But the fun thing is, it was developed by NASA and the European Space Agency, and it actually has a connector on it called a Space Wire connector. Ooh, I don't even know what it does, but apparently it's the uniform connector that NASA and a whole bunch of other people actually use for high data throughput on space equipment. It's very small form factor, and from what you can see in the diagram, it's just what really looks like a ribbon cable that gets fed into something. I gotta tell you, seeing that kind of technology, you'd think NASA would come up with a cooler name, and we have USB, Ethernet, FireWire, and they're just gonna come up with SpaceWire? Really? That's what you're gonna go with? I guess it's a little self-explanatory. I just can't wait to see what kind of gadgets this thing gets hooked up to. Unfortunately, when I first saw it a little while ago, and actually when the guys over at Engadget, where this story is currently located, saw it, it was rocking in around $325. The kind of thing that you would buy, put in your house, hook up to a couple extra internal hard drives too, and this would be a fantastic media server. Now it's rocking in somewhere over $2,700. Yes, it's clocking in nice and large, probably because it has that fun space wire on it. I wonder if they have the option to remove that. Has all kinds of other things on there. It has a monitor out, has a power switch, which is a tiny little button, and a whole bunch of other stuff. I can't really figure out what all the different little doodads are, but you know, It'd be really, really fun to play around with something like this. Not only because it's an embedded Linux and it's very small and very compact and probably very useful, but it also because of, you know, just what it is. So just putting that out there because, I mean, hey, what else would you do in space? Well, apparently, they bring laptops up into space. I kind of thought that's how they would go. I didn't think that they were going the tiny little small form factor PCs. And apparently, they actually have PC laptops that go up there, and one of the astronauts actually brought up a USB drive, probably with pictures of his kids or some other such stuff on there, and lo and behold, the man infected his PC with a virus. So there's now viruses in space, to the tune of Pigs in Space from back in the Muppet days. But no, they're saying it's an innocuous virus. It's one of those things where you can't really go to Symantec.com or download the latest virus definitions. You're in space. You're over where the satellites are. I'm pretty sure it's hard to get a nice connection up there. They're saying that these laptops aren't connected to the internet or anything like that. I think it would be really cool to have like a tethered connection to the internet. You know, have Twitter in space. And actually, that's even more of a Pigs in Space kind of a tune you could do. Twitter in space. But yeah, I'm pretty sure you could fit any word into that. But I would just kind of enjoy having a little bit more access, not for us necessarily to the astronauts, but have a little bit more interactivity. They'd probably shoot their productivity right in the foot to actually have an internet connection up there. It doesn't necessarily look like they're rocking out with the absolute breaking point on technology with the laptops. They look like little IBM ThinkPads from what I can see in the picture. The guy, however, does in the photo that they have from over at one of the Wired blogs, actually does look a little bit surprised that somebody's taking a picture. Given the cramped quarters, I'm pretty sure you'd kind of know that somebody's floating around with a camera, but hey, you know, whatever. They're saying it's not a real big virus. It's the worm W32 Gamma AG worm. I think they should rename it in honor of it being the first identified space virus. They're saying that there have been other instances where the PCs have been infected while they were in orbit. Just kind of a scary thing. And we're not talking about the Andromeda strain anyway, which I actually put a link to up in for the Wikipedia entry, so you can actually go over there and check that out. All you young kids who may not have seen the novel, rather you've watched the horrible movie. The novel is so much better, trust me. Michael Crichton, very good author. But yeah, I'm getting off on a little tangent here. Moving right along. I don't know if you've ever been to a Boy Scout camp or something like that, or a park where they have trees that are kind of bent or shaped or blown over in the wind, and they're still growing, but they're at such an angle where you can use them as benches or other kinds of furniture. If you've seen interesting different configurations of branches and stuff like that, and how exactly they're used by people as kind of a way of living in harmony with nature. Well, now there's a new company that's actually coming out called Plantware. They've found a way to grow trees into specific shapes. This is from over at ecogeek.org. Now, I'm pretty sure that the artist's rendering so-called thing that they have up there, I don't really like these as artist renderings. I see way too many of these in the architecture program, and it's not that I think that they're bad. I just think that people get a little bit lazy with how they drop people in sometimes, and more often than not, you'll see people floating over the ground, you'll see people not interacting or having the wrong perspective, and it kind of changes the way that the thing actually looks. I know when an artist actually draws something, they really pay special attention to that, and I think people get it a little bit sloppy with these little representations. But they show you it growing in all kinds of different formats and different configurations, and they're saying that they would be able to eventually grow houses out of this. I don't know how that exactly would work. I also don't know how it actually would interface with the indigenous species, because, I mean, there's been a couple really bad instances of foreign plant matter being introduced. For instance, the southeastern United States with the overgrowth of kudzu, any place where bamboo is planted in the United States. There's a lot of non-indigenous species which can pretty much wreak havoc. So I wonder exactly what kind of species that they're going to be using and how the controls are going to be put into place. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a lot of movement with this, but it does look like an interesting technology. It's probably one that I would really consider for a lot more low-level structures like park benches, bus stops and other things like that. I think that would make more efficient use of it, and it would, green up your area at the same point in time as providing a useful place. And it would also be able to withstand the overall uses, So it's something fun to play around with. Hopefully there'll be a little bit more advancement in that. I don't know about you, but I hate waking up in the morning. And it's not because I don't like going to sleep. I really don't like that either. I think sleep's pretty much a waste of time, which kind of explains my schedule. But I just don't like waking up in the morning because I always feel like, I don't know, it's just like an hour and a half in the morning where I kind of lose it. I don't really know what's happening. It takes me a long time to actually get with the flow of the day. Short story, walking around my house at 5:30 in the morning, I had one of the scares of my life as my son's tiny little head popped out of his room in a place that I wasn't used to seeing him. He's just starting to sleep in his big boy bed, and it freaked me out like you wouldn't believe. I jumped back about a foot, my eye half open, walking down the hallway at 5:30 in the morning, see his tiny little elven face pop out. So I now have to be wary in the morning. But it takes a lot. It almost takes an act of God to wake me up in the morning. My wife kind of realizes this, and she needs to wake up to the radio. I need to wake up to that blaring air horn style siren. She does not like that. She actually says that it's eventually going to give somebody a heart attack, probably her. So she's usually either waking me up or I usually kind of filter into existence after she turns the light on right next to my face. So I need something a little bit above and beyond the standard to actually wake up. There's two little gadgets that they're talking about over at device.com. It's the Mood Lamp Alarm Clock. It's the Room Tech Being Z Alarm Clock and the Mood Lamp are kind of two little things that they have in concert. The one is a very strange looking clock. It looks like the Reach toothbrush guy where the hinge is in the way in the back. When the mouth opens, there's actually a speaker in there. It can play any one of three incredibly loud and irritating sounds. Already it gets my vote for something that would probably wake me up. It also waves its hands back and forth. It's probably going to have all kinds of strange noises associated with those mechanical parts. That would probably get my attention at the very least. And if I put it across the room, I might even have the opportunity to stay awake long enough to realize that I'm supposed to be awake. But now this thing also has another strange feature. It actually knows when its cousin, the Mood Lamp, is within 15 feet of itself. So if it goes off, it actually turns the lamp to the brightest setting that it has, and the lamp starts dancing around or something like that. It's it's a concert of gadgets in your room that are all conspiring against you. This is the beginning of the robot uprising. Please send your documents in to caffeination@gmail.com. But It's one of those things where this is probably an incredibly good idea, and even though it's executed with somewhat of a J-pop, Japanese kind of pop culture styling, this probably would look a little bit more normal in a child's room. Right now, I have my grandfather's alarm clock in my room because when my wife's not around and I need to set it to go off, this sucker has a alarm on it that can wake somebody up three houses down. So that's what I need. I need something to like shatter the illusion of sleep. So hopefully maybe some kind of concert of these two things and whatever other gadgets this company comes out with would be able to rouse you from whatever slumber you happen to be currently enjoying. All right, moving right along the way, we have another little story. This one's from TechCrunch, which every once in a while we pull an interesting little tidbit from them. They usually do a lot of industry news and stuff like that, and it's not necessarily stuff I feel like putting out on the Caffeination website. But this is kind of interesting. A while ago, we were talking about the service Hulu, which is actually a conglomeration of a bunch of different networks to make content available for free online and basically reap the ad revenue from it. So stuff like Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, which I absolutely love, Horrible in its own way. You should head on over there and check that out. Just do a search for Dr. Horrible. You'll come along the correct linkage to do all that. But Hulu has a bunch of different programming up there, and you usually watch one or two ads. It's almost the old style of advertising where way back in the day of like Abbott and Costello, there would be Colgate Comedy Hour. Everything would be sponsored by Colgate. There'd be tiny little intermittent ads every once in a while. No longer, you know, do you have the mass of commercials with like 30 seconds each and like 4 or 5 minutes of commercials in between it. That I think is the problem with mainstream TV right now. We live in an instant on culture, and mainstream TV right now doesn't really satisfy that. So the now defunct network, the WB, home of such shows as Smallville, which I think's moved on to a different network. I never really watched that one. There's a bunch of other different things on there. They had the Gilmore Girls. They had Dawson's Creek. Like all the real teen angst dramas from the past, I don't know, like 15 years. They were on the WB. That was part of their shtick. That's their target audience, and they're now launching the WB.com, which by the time you get this should eventually be up and ready. You're going to be able to watch all these different series online. That's really cool, and they actually add extra functionality to it. Not only are you going to be able to watch them online, but you're going to be able to take clips out of them, splice them up with an inline video editor, and actually post them and embed them elsewhere. This is what people need. There's a company called Red Lasso, which actually debuted their software last year at PodCamp Philly, and they're currently being sued by all these different networks because they had a system in place where you could take clips from TV, put it up online, and the ad revenue would get shared back to the vendors, or to the people who actually put the program up there. I loved that idea, and I really hope that Red Lasso can actually get everything together, and because I know a lot of different sports blogs were using this. It was just such a fantastic resource to see that cut out. So the fact that it's coming up, maybe, you know, it might not be that you're really interested in the WB. But if you run a blog or you run a podcast, I'd highly suggest you mention it if you like the idea of what they're trying to do. So the more services that we have, like Hulu, the WB, Juiced, all these other content services that not only have the revenue stream with ads and other things like that in there, so that the people who created the content can actually gain some kind of value back from it, the more of these things that get pushed out there, I'm pretty sure the better our experience is going to get, and the less times you're going to see takedown notices because somebody posted a clip of Stephen Colbert on their website or something like that. All right, moving right along, kind of a little bit of a divergent path here. This is a new meaning to the word cover fire. I don't know how many of you out there have ever had the opportunity to use a fire extinguisher to actually attempt to extinguish a fire. I've played around with fire extinguishers. I've only ever had to actually use one once when I was a security guard at a hospital. The bed that one of the patients was sleeping on actually caught fire from underneath. The electrical motor was trying to lift the patient up, and it caught fire. patient was not overly heavy or anything like that. It was just, I guess, the end of the life cycle for the motor. And it flamed up, started burning the mattress. The person was unable to get out of the bed. And we all got up there very quickly. I was able to, you know, put out the fire and everything like that. They moved the woman to another bed. No injuries or anything like that. But it was a scary thing. Now, you might wonder how this all ties into this story. Well, this is called the shooter. It's a different kind of fire extinguisher that doesn't have all the different archaic qualities that the current fire extinguisher has. The current fire extinguisher systems is basically a pressurized can of foam or whatever other different flame retardant materials or conglomerations are in there, and they have to be charged fairly frequently, and they have to be, there's a lot of maintenance and upkeep to them, and they're fairly heavy and they're a little bit hard to use when you actually consider how they work, and you also have to be a little bit closer to the fire than you probably would want to. The shooter actually has ammo. There's 8 capsules in there. You can drop back and lay down a suppressive cover fire into the fire itself. It actually drops these CO2 canisters. I don't exactly know how it works. I'd love to see a video of it or something like that. They don't have one up there, but I'm pretty sure it just drops these canisters, and since it puts CO2 out there and fire needs oxygen to burn, unless it's burning something that creates oxygen as it goes, you're pretty sure to do a number on the fire. And with 8 canisters and the ability to reload, I think this would make fighting fire a lot more fun. I'd like to see them use this in like a larger format, you know, like instead of the shooter, the tiny little mortar to help you put out fires. I think it'd be kind of fun to sit back and have like a CO2 cannon to just throw like a barrage, the shock and awe campaign onto a warehouse fire or something like that. That I would pay to see. Instead of having the ice rivers in the middle of the winter, you'd have a series of mortars set up around people just chucking CO2 bombs in there. Although that's probably not the best thing if you're trying to pull somebody out. CO2 kind of replaces oxygen in the whole breathing system. So I just wanted to put that out there because I thought it was cool. Another little thing that I thought it was cool is called Foldrix drives. Actually looks like tiny little icons. These are just a series of little USB drives that I thought were pretty funny. The 4-gig model run you roughly $55. They actually look like tiny folder icons. There's the manila folder, blue, purple, cyan, whatever other colors you want. It's interesting. They look tiny little form factor things. I'm pretty sure it's more the cachet of actually owning such a unique USB drive. And I actually saw a link earlier today that I neglected to copy or snag, but it was a teddy bear, and you removed the head of the teddy bear and actually shoved the bear carcass onto your laptop or wherever else you wanted it, and it would allow you to use it. That one was only a gig, so I really didn't think it was news. However, bear carcasses do make it rather interesting USB drives. On to the next little story, kind of a switch up again, last little Olympic story for this episode anyway. There's been a lot of really interesting and cool tech stuff from the Olympics, but this is how Google Earth helped to win a gold medal. This is from, again, over at TechCrunch. Apparently, there was a Olympic cyclist named Kristen Armstrong from the U.S. She did her time trial in December 2007 in China, which basically means that she ran through the course that they were going to be using to qualify for the ability to come back. What she did was she took her husband's GPS logger with her. When she got home, she plugged the deep GPS data, the geocache data, into Google Earth and a couple other different services and found the most accurate representation of that route in her area. So she lives in Boise, Idaho. So she found a training route somewhere in the environs of where she lived that matched the style of course. So she was able to actually plan out something that was almost exactly the same course. I think that's unbelievable. It's a great use of information. It's really kind of speaks to what Google is all about. Google's all about the fact that the more information you have at your disposal, the better off you can do. And she got gold. So the tail line that they have here is Google proves that, once again, information is a competitive advantage. What it should have read was a little picture of a G.I. Joe and saying, you know, knowing is half the battle. That's what I think they should have put there. I think it was a little bit of a fall down on TechCrunch's part. But moving right along, turns out that Disney might not actually own the copyright to early Mickey Mouse cartoons. Now, this is a little bit counterintuitive to what Disney says, which is basically that they own Mickey Mouse. But according to the laws of the day, way back when, and Disney has a very long and storied history with copyright, basically every time Mickey Mouse comes up for copyright to go into public domain, Disney appeals to some sort of powers that be within the law enforcement community or the law creating community to extend copyright indefinitely, basically. Originally, it was, I think copyright originally was something around like 25 or 40 years, and then it was extended to 70 years, and then it was extended to XYZ. If you really want to check about it, you can do a search for it on the internet, but that's not what we came here to tell you about. Disney is one of those companies that reaped the benefits of other people not necessarily doing the correct thing and putting their works under copyright. So Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, a lot of the different stories for the early movies actually came out of copyright a couple years before. And on some of them, specifically on Bambi and I think Snow White, Disney was rumored to have been working on the movie before the copyright expired. So they waited until after the copyright expired and then leapt onto it so they didn't have to pay royalties back to the people who actually created the story. Now you switch up to modern day, and it turns out that Disney might have actually flubbed the patent or the copyright applications for their earliest cartoons, including Mickey Mouse. So the law, though, as it was written way back in the day, said that if you messed it up somehow, the works were then put into public domain. So it is quite possible and that the early works of Disney or the early works of Mickey Mouse's career might currently be in public domain. Nobody's probably going to actually challenge Disney on this, although it is kind of scary when you consider some of the tactics they've already used to talk about some of the other people that are out there. A gentleman who actually put this forth and was trying to put a legal paper together was threatened to have been Disney threatened to sue the gentleman and say that if he published the paper, they would sue him. He published the paper anyway, and there has been no suit forthcoming. So I don't really know if Disney kind of figured out that maybe they are on the wrong side, but it's very unlikely that somebody's going to challenge them on this. I just think it's kind of interesting to all the different intricacies of copyright laws and how they're played out. So wherever you stand on this and whatever your opinion is of it, it's always interesting to see the dual standard. Companies always want everybody else's stuff in the public domain. They always want all their stuff kept nice and tightly wrapped. So who knows? Maybe we'll end up seeing a Mickey derivation sometime in the future. All right, moving right along to something. If you feel like creating something on your own, you always can go with some open source stuff. And if you've played around on the internet in the past, maybe 4 or 5 months, you might have seen stories about a service called Muxtape, or there's another one called Mix, and there right now there's Blip.fm that I'm currently playing around with. Basically, these sites allow you to find music that's been posted online, not file sharing. Now, these sites allow you to actually buy the MP3s through legal vendors, but they also allow you to ship to mix and create different playlists of your songs, so you can head on out there and basically share your musical tastes with the world. I've been finding some interesting stuff, seeing what limits they have on there. Well, if you'd like to create your own Muxtape, which was recently taken down, there is an open source project called OpenTape that allows you to head on over to your server and put, I guess, your samples of MP3s or whatever you want to put up there and run your own version of it. I kind of think this would be really cool for a closed beta style use, basically so that you or a couple of your friends could get together, pool your MP3 collections, put it on somebody's server somewhere, and open it up to just your friends, just the people whose music's actually in there. I kind of think it would be really interesting to see what you could do in that, kind of the little closed walled garden community. You might actually get some really interesting stuff playing around there. So I wanted to kind of put it out there. And you can always build your own server like that, but how many of you out there have ever actually thought about building your own ink pen? Well, this is one of the stranger stories I've seen recently, and I just had to put it up here because I can't believe the price point that they're going with this. This thing's $39, and it's listed under uncommon goods. Basically, it comes as a sheet of sheet metal with all kinds of other different cutouts actually etched into it. You break the cutouts apart, and as per the instructions on it, you actually build and craft your own art-style ink pen. So I don't really think that I'd spend $39 on a pen that I have to build myself, but I like the idea of it. The idea on whole I think is relatively sound. I think it was really cool, so I decided to pass it along. I'm all for interesting form factors and interesting product designs, so this kind of fit right in. All right, now we have a couple little things, then we'll send you on to the caffeine and food. Next up, we have a little story about something called Glassdoor.com. I've heard a lot of people talking about this recently, and I don't know if anybody out there actually has used this, but this allows you to basically go in and anonymously review superiors and CEOs of different companies. And you can also post your current salary, and this is all anonymous, so you could be lying through your teeth. But this is one of those services where right now I think this is probably a fantastic resource. If you're currently looking for a job or something like that, and you're looking for a job at a major corporation or something, you can head on over here and check out. You have to log in if you want to really see the nitty-gritty of the different stuff. You actually have to share something yourself. So you could share your, you know, you could put your current job in there, whatever company you currently work at. You could always put that in there, or you could create one up. I mean, that's these sites work on the honesty of the people who are submitting information. And the honesty usually gets skewed after a certain point in time that it's been out in the public. Right now, it's just starting to gain a lot of traction. They only have something like 100 and some odd companies. They're saying they have 11,000 companies. I've heard differing reviews, but they have some rather big ones like Microsoft, JP Morgan, Accenture. There's a whole bunch of different ones they're scrolling around on the front. And it's interesting to see what people actually think about the CEOs they work for. They have satisfied, neutral. I'm pretty sure there's some nasty ones in there. You can compare salaries. For instance, a JP Morgan Chase personal banker apparently makes $35,000 a year, whereas a Google software engineer makes somewhere around $96,000 a year. I'm in the wrong line of work, because somebody, some Accenture senior manager is making $143,000 a year. Don't really know what that exactly involves, but I'm pretty sure with a little training I might be able to do it. But when you're looking at these, it's really interesting. Like I said, the earlier you get into these, after it's reached certain a critical stage where there's enough reviews on each individual person, the more honest and direct the information gets. Wikipedia is the only resource online that I've ever seen where people can do anonymous edits, even though you really can't anymore, where people have ever been able to do anonymous edits to such a point where it still becomes a viable resource because there were enough people counteracting the morons, is the easiest way to put it. So before all the morons jump on it, you might want to head on over to Glassdoor.com if you're currently looking for office work or whatever you happen to be trying to find. Other little thing that I found out there was overheardintheoffice.com. My wife loves all the different Overheard in New York and stuff like that, so I wanted to kind of put it out there. It's just different little things you can post anonymously to comments or things that you basically overheard or other people, and you can vote them up or vote them down. There's Overheard in New York, Overheard at the Beach. There's no really funny ones up there right now. Some of them may or may not be safe for work, so you can kind of at your own risk, let's just put it that way. And then the last little thing that we have in Tech Cruft here today is Geek Stained Glass. My father does a lot of stained glass work. I'm going to have to send him some of these designs because they're really kind of spiffy. Basically, it's different stained glass work with geek credentials attached to them. There's Nintendo controllers, McDonald's baskets. I don't really know what McDonald's actually does. There's a Link one. There's a really, really well done version of actually a pixelated Mega Man. So there's a whole bunch of different interesting stuff, and if you're into stained glass, you might want to just check that out. I kind of really dig what they did there. I don't really know what all the video games that are actually there for, but there's also apparently a window with Einstein on it, so you know, I'm waiting for one with the Konami code or something like that. All right, moving right along to the caffeine and food section here at the Caffeination Podcast, which, by the way, you can listen to over at www.caffeination.com, and you can send all comments, feedback, suggestions, and hate mail over to caffeination@gmail.com. All right, this guide probably won't end well, and it might end up getting taken down a little bit, but it looks intriguing. This is how to make caffeine jello shots. These are designed to be non-alcoholic, just ways to ingest caffeine quickly. I know this might end up being a hit with some of the younger people that are out there who are currently trying to suck as much caffeine down their gullet as possible, but I kind of like the ingenuity with it, and hopefully A lot of the different reviews that I've read of it have basically said that this is all stuff you can get in a standard supermarket. And caffeine has a very bitter taste, so this is a way of sweetening it up. And while I don't necessarily endorse it, I kind of laud the creativity that they showed. Next little story that we have up here is Red Bull may give you sticky blood. Now, I don't know if this is a little bit of sensationalist journalism or whatever or not, but apparently, according to the Times Online and EnergyFiend.com, where I saw the story, if you are drinking sugar-free Red Bull, there is a possibility that you may have blood that clots a little bit more readily than people who are not drinking it. And their study so far is a relatively small sample, but they tested 30 college students that were regular drinkers of caffeine substances, and they tested them after an hour after ingesting just one Red Bull sugar caffeine. And they said the blood profile was along the lines of somebody who had cardiac trouble. The cardiovascular profile of somebody with heart disease. So the chemical in sugar-free Red Bull causes the blood to become sticky and cause blood clots. So yet another reason why if you have heart trouble, you probably want to stay well away from the energy drinks. Although the fact that it may be actually linked to a sweetener is probably not good news for everybody else out there who uses artificial sweeteners. Up next we have HWRD, How Would Rambo Drink? I saw this and I just had to post it. It's a bandolier-style drinking accessory. It's to put a lot of beer cans, soda cans, whatever else you'd like to have, and it's basically, they have one for beer cans that's just a slung on the one side. There's another one that they had up there, which I can't find right now, that actually had the traditional crossed-style ammo belt with a bunch of different shot glasses in it. I'm pretty sure it's mostly a gag gift, because I'm don't think that necessarily it'd be easy to down 7 beers at once. And it's not really a... that's actually 6. Yeah, of course it would be 6. It's a 6-pack. that one's from over at uncrate.com. there's a lot of interesting advertisements for how to drink a beer. Another one's a beer stick, which I really don't know why you would do this, but it kind of seems like an interesting way to imbibe mass quantities of beer incredibly quickly. This is called the beer stick because it's a giant syringe for beer. It's a way to drink 24 ounces of beer in less than 2 seconds. They have buxom advertising babes that are currently lauding the product, and it's basically you pull a giant plastic tube with, medical grade plastics up front so you can actually put it into your mouth. You either lean against the wall or somebody pushes on the tube and actually pushes the beer straight down into your stomach. This is a little bit more hardcore than your standard beer bong, which we actually have a story about a German speed beer bong, or German beer stein with a speed hole, which I actually thought was kind of cool. It's a little bit different than the beer stick, but the idea behind it is a standard stein shape form factor, if you will, with a tiny little plug on the bottom. So as you're drinking, you can pop the plug if you want and actually drink a lot quicker because gravity will push the liquid level down. It's an interesting idea, and it's probably aimed at more of the I just turned 21 and I'm probably not going to remember the next couple days kind of crowd, and a little bit less on the people who like the craft beers, let's just say. I don't really know anybody who does like a beer funnel or a beer bong or a keg stand or whatever you want to call it, whatever you're trying to do with a good beer. It's usually really bad beer that's probably better to be drunk quickly. And then the last little thing that we have here is the quick hit coffee and caffeine imbibe results are slowly pouring in. I've had a lot of people who seemed a little bit stunned that I was asking for tips on how to get caffeine in me quickly. And I'm going to basically put it out there that since I've had my son, since we've been walking around, my wife has never drunk caffeine very much in her life. She now drinks tea fairly regularly. So I've been looking for ways to get my coffee fix in the morning relatively quickly because I just don't have enough time to brew the entire pot of coffee. And it was suggested that tea was actually a very good reason. Somebody else actually suggested having baggies of instant coffee. While I'm not adverse to instant coffee, I realize that I like better coffee now. I don't know what it is, if it's the fact that I've stopped drinking flavored coffee, which, a small aside here, I haven't drunk flavored coffee in a very long time. I actually got a gifted set of coffee and work from one of the faculty, and it actually included a portion of mocha coffee. Now, I haven't had it in a while, and it had the big artificial flavoring label on the top, so I tried to brew a pot, and it tasted horrible. I mean, I really felt bad, but I could not finish the cup of coffee that I was drinking, and I realized because it's not only the fact that I drink black coffee. I don't drink with any sweeteners in them usually, so it's not just that fact. It's also the fact that I, since there is no artificial flavor and I've just been tasting the coffee beans, it was so sickeningly sweet of a flavor on top of the coffee itself that I just couldn't bring myself to do it. So I don't know what I'm going to end up doing with the actual coffee at this point in time, but I can't see putting it in the garden because it's not really, you know, it would end up with a lovely mocha smell throughout the tomato patch, but I'm not sure. I might end up trying to drink it again, but I really don't think that it's actually going to work out. One of the things that we actually tried to do here at the house to change over how I get my coffee in the morning is I actually switched out the coffee machine for the espresso machine. The espresso machine now has the place of honor on the countertop, and I've been pulling a quick shot in the morning when I get a chance. So I've had a lot more success with that. Thank you, Michael. Than I had with the brewing the entire pot of coffee or trying to use it from the day before or whatever. I mean, it's all kind of up in the air at the moment, just trying to work out the situation, because as the boy gets older and things get a little bit more crazy, it's been harder and harder to get the routine down in the morning. But, you know, we're working pretty good. All right, this has been the Caffeination Podcast. Thank you so much for sticking with us through the strange rambling rants that have been here today. Hopefully you enjoyed today's show. This being, of course, Caffeination number 263. I'll be able to open up the house in around a half hour as it is currently 11:30. A lot of preparation for these shows. Just remember one more time, head on over to PodCamp Philly to check it out if you are going to be in the Philadelphia area September 6th and 7th. This has been Caffeination 263, which I already said, coincidentally enough, and it's located lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. And you can email me comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, your robot plans, or whatever else you feel like doing over to caffeination@gmail.com. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for dealing with all the strange stories here today. And stay caffeinated, people.